Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
He kōna I purangi tēnei nā te reo irirangi o Aotearoa.
The following podcast has some fruity language. Sorry, my bad. So take care of who's listening around you.
Kia ora koutou katoa, welcome to another episode of It's Personal with me, Anika Moa. This is my podcast where I talk to really interesting people about just interesting stuff.
The only regret I have in my life is that I didn't get into dogs earlier. That sounds so weirdly wrong and kind of a little bit unwell.
And today we are talking about ageing. It happens to all of us. If we're lucky, and someone who's doing it with style and class is the wonderful, amazing, I love her so much, Robin Malcolm. I want to first ask you, how are you?
I'm good. I'm tired. I'm busy. I thought as I got older that I would get less busy, but I'm getting more busy, which is a good thing because actors aren't meant to retire. Because you can't, because we don't get superannuation. Well, I don't know about you, but my mortgage, you know, when all the interest rates went up, it was just like, whoa, I'm going to have to work now till I'm 160. There's no way. So it's quite good that I'm busier now than I was.
Because then you can afford the bigger mortgage.
Yeah, but I think I'm desperate to get out of Auckland. I really am.
Can you leave? How old are your sons?
18 next week. The youngest one's 18 next week.
Oh, bugger off then.
I know, he's going to Wellington. Actually, when we...
You're free!
I know, except I've got two dogs and a cat and I've got...
Take them with you!
80 dahlias in the garden.
Okay, so you have to move to Ahipara. I'll move with you. Lesbian commune.
Lesbian commune and...
You're not a lesbian.
I could be. I'm not, though.
No, you're not.
No, I'm not. I tried once. Not for me.
Just once?
Yeah.
Who was it? I bet it was another actor.
Barely remember. I was very drunk at the time.
So you're good but tired.
Mm-hmm.
Want to move away from Auckland. You hate Auckland. You hate the mayor.
Yeah, hate the mayor.
What about
love
that?
Chloe though.
I love Chloe.
Chloe. Oh, can we talk about Chloe? Can Chloe be our next prime minister?
I'd like that.
Oh my God. I do feel, I'm obviously going to declare my political hand. I'm devastated with what happened at the election.
Yeah.
But also, I think this might be the real rise of the Greens.
I really do. I agree.
I think the Greens are just going to come out of the ground fully.
I think that she should be Prime Minister one day.
She is so clever, and she is so articulate, and she's so fearless, and she strikes me as being one of those politicians who won't get tipped over by the need to be liked or pleased.
Mm-hmm.
Or pleased, you know, like the problem with all these wonderful politicians who enter into politics and then suddenly they get caught up in the need to lie and put political spin on stuff because otherwise you might lose a voter. And it is so, so depressing. And I look at Chloe and I just went, hold your truth. Don't ever change. Don't ever change, Chloe.
Robin,
yes,
why did you become an actor?
Because I...
Yeah, deep, hey? What made you want to... You're from Ashburton. You're walking around, la, 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 one day...
Well, I wasn't finding my tribe in Ashburton, that's for sure. I was doing a lot of music, so I was disappearing into music a lot, into classical music, and I painted, and I was disappearing into that. So I liked disappearing into a creative world.
Mm-hmm.
And I also wasn't very happy with myself at the time, who is at that age, so I liked disappearing into other people.
Mm-hmm.
And I then, there was a moment, I entered into a talent quest when I was 14.
Yes.
And I made people laugh. And I remember, You know how those very key moments in your life, it's like you can remember the smell of things, mm-hmm, you can remember mm-hmm. detail. And I remember I played Miss Piggy. I did this Miss Piggy. Yeah, I did Miss Piggy, and I remember looking out and everyone was pissing themselves, and I was on my bicycle, and it was at night time, and it was a warm northwesterly in Ashburton, and the sun was down, and I had my Miss Piggy wig on a polystyrene wig block on the handlebars, and I just remember that bike ride, and I laughed all the way home. I was so happy. It was just glee. It was pure glee that I had managed to galvanise an entire room with laughter. So that sense of live theatre being this just gloriously
I love it.
Affirming, like it's a civic experience, like you're with other people when you're being entertained in the theatre, was just, I'd never experienced anything like it. And that just sat there.
And that was that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And it's a weird thing. I still find it, and I find it even more than being in front of a camera. Live theatre, when you're on stage, people think, I could never do that. It's terrifying.
It is terrifying.
It's actually not. Like, I find it one of the safest places to be. Being a character on stage, telling a story in front of a bunch of people I don't know. There's something about it that is so it's safe. There's something glorious about it, even if you're playing the villain, because you're in the middle of story and everybody connects to story in some way, and everybody connects to, like everybody has their own journey with it, and you're all experienced, you know, because we live lives that are so singular, you know, right?
Yeah.
And when you're in a place of story with other people, it is a collective experience, but it's a beautiful collective experience.
So you're talking about live performance. What about behind the camera? In front of the camera, and you're doing the performance knowing that it will get to people. Is that
just
as
thrilling? Yeah, it's the same thing. Yeah, okay. It's just as thrilling. It's different, you know, like in a way I liken film and television a bit more to something like painting. So you're making the work before you show it to the audience.
Yeah.
And there's nothing you can do once it's out there. So it's a real gift. It's like, here it is, this is what we made, and you let it go, and then you go and you can take it however you want to take it. I can't control whether you're going to like this or not. Often I think where television comes adrift, or any entertainment comes adrift, when there's a lot of money involved, is that they try to control what the audience is going to think.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, but the audience is not going to like you if you do this. They're not going to, you know, it's like, no, that's not the point of this. This has to, it has to be seen more as a gift, and I love it for that. And I guess for me, it's the other side of it is the being the other person, is getting to explore a psyche of somebody that I will never be, you know, and getting to sort of push myself through that silhouette. I remember Miranda Harcourt saying once that she thought that actors were like emotional bungee jumpers.
Yeah, I suppose so.
And I love that because it's true. It's like I get to have a breakdown on TV or film, you know.
Yeah, but isn't it hard? Because you're playing Penny on After the Party, which you co-wrote with a friend. I can't remember the name.
Diane Taylor is the writer.
Yeah.
She is.
Oh, okay.
She is the writer. I'm not the writer. Her and I co-created.
Brilliant.
Her and I co-created it, and we co-storylined it.
Okay.
And so we did all of that together, and then she would go away and write the scripts, and then she
everything, the whole script.
No. She did. Initially, we had six scripts which we had done together, and we decided to get it to that point without anybody else coming near us.
Yes. Yeah.
We were like, because the minute you get some other fucker in there with money, they start to go, oh, I don't like that. And we were like, which can be incredibly valuable.
Mm-hmm.
And what did we know? I mean, I'd never, you know, I made Agent Anna, but that was it. And Di had written some films. So we knew we were flying a bit blind, but we also knew that it was really important that we find our voice first. So we did that, and then we connected up with people, and we had to then pull those six episodes apart. Okay. And we probably re-storylined maybe 35% of it. And then we got some extra writing brilliance in with us, and they wrote some drafts of some episodes, and then Di would work on them. So it became much more collaborative as things went on.
I just want to tell you one thing. It's the best piece of TV in New Zealand ever. I just think it's so bloody
mate,
good.
Thanks.
And I loved Outrageous Fortune. Like, I was a Berg Westie fan. Like, that was really good writing and TV. But this is just so... Oh, I hate you because of Penny. I hate Penny. I hate her! But then you've just got this amazing, your daughter, and then Al's Carrad.
Al's Carrad.
Police Carrad, playing the police. It's brilliant. And the storyline.
I
love it.
I'm really, really, really fucking proud of it.
I know,
I'm really
you
proud
be.
Of it. And I'm really proud of it for Di, because Di's been working as a writer. She's been doing her own thing. She's 60. How old are you, Di? I can't remember. She's 60 something. Who cares? But she is a phenomenal talent. She's phenomenal, and she's so thoughtful, and she's really, and her and I just had the most brilliant collaborative relationship. I mean, you know, we fought hard, but just this is her voice as much as anything. And Peter Salmon came in as our director-producer early on, and his kind of... his vision is all the way through it. And then our beautiful cameraman, who we actually broke.
You broke?
Yeah, we broke
him. Who was it?
Dave Cameron, because he shot the whole thing on his shoulder every day. And poor then mate. Eventually he just went, oh.
He broke him.
And we went, oh, take a wee break and come back. But I am, I'm super, super proud of it. And partly because never at any point did Di and I go, we need to make this successful. We wanted to make it good on our own terms. And I remember having arguments with people going, look, if we're going to fuck this up, I want to fuck it up on my terms, not yours. Yep. And that became the thing that we held on to. And I think that's part of it, is there was a greater risk for us with this, I think. And I honestly didn't know. It could have gone down like a cup of cold sick.
It didn't. Did you want to write this with Di or have this happen? Because the older you get, do you think the less that you or go for auditions and there's a bit of ageism as an actor? So you tend to miss out on all those roles, or that you're too old?
Yeah, they call it that. There's a term for it. They call it aspirational casting. So how old are you?
43.
So according to this, if you see yourself played on camera, on screen, you really, really would rather yourself be played by a 33-year-old.
Right.
Exactly, right? So I would go in an audition for a woman in her 50s, and they would sometimes cast a woman in her late... And they'd give it to you.
Or you go for the role, I get it.
Yeah, I'd go for the role, you get it. Or I'll go and I'll audition for a character in their late 60s, early 70s, and I'll get it over somebody in that age group. And so I was auditioning for stuff, and it was going to actresses, very good actresses in their late 30s, and yet the character was my age. And I was like, what the fuck? And Di was feeling the same way. And we both went, okay, let's make something where the character has to be played by somebody
of real age.
The other thing we used to talk about a lot is, you know, all those awful, awful, awful films and their great actresses.
Yeah.
Where Meryl Streep's having sex with William Baldwin, or Diane Keaton's having sex with As Good As It Gets. And when you play, I don't think it's the case so much, because thank God for Frances McDormand. But if you play an older woman who is romantically engaged with somebody, it's just going to be gross. So what we have to do is we have to put you in a lot of white linen. We have to surround you with a lot of very, very rich kitchen porn.
You don't see anything either.
And you don't see anything.
No boobs,
God knows.
No fanny.
Ooh, ooh, old body, ooh, revolt. And then you and then you also have to giggle and laugh a lot.
I know.
So those actresses,
be a little bit prudish.
And those actresses are all like,
I'm just laughing their way to the bank.
I'm so cute and old. And it's like, no, you're not. Nobody when they get old is cute and old.
Yeah.
We're angry and we're fucked up and we've got history and we've made mistakes and we're probably going to make more and we think we're grown up and we're not and we think we're wise and we're not. And we're just as, like, my mother is 84 and she says to me, is she 84? Sorry, Mum. She's 83. She says to me, I don't feel my age. I feel just as moronic as I was when I was 24. Like, so that was the thing, right?
So is it hard to age in this industry then? And you got to make your own stuff
up. Yeah, it is. I think it's better. Since we started, so we had written our first six episodes of After the Party before The Mayor of Easttown came out.
Oh.
So we were like going, oh my God, have you seen The Mayor of Easttown? And we were like, the bitch stole our story.
That's such a good
program. But actually, there's a zeitgeist thing happening at the moment. So with her doing that, I think Nicole Kidman did something where she wore a bad wig and had no makeup. And we were like, wow, even she's giving it a crack, you know. And then Frances McDormand, who just is the trailblazer in America of all trailblazers. Great. Like nobody is doing what she's doing. Mm-hmm. And you know, turning up to the Oscars, having brushed her hair and not putting any makeup on and wearing Birkenstocks. I'm like, yes.
That's what you're aspiring
Hi.
To.
Yeah.
One thing I want to know, because I am a solo parent. I'm a solo mum of four kids. And I work. And I and that juggle is really, I'm going to try not swear here, really hard. How did you do it? And how do you do it?
I don't know.
Oh, cool. Moving on.
No. I really don't know.
What?
You go like this a lot.
Yeah.
You go...
Lots of wine, lots of swearing.
Yeah. You go... You wake up in the morning, you go, you all right? Everyone okay? Cool. Mum's got to go to Australia now. This is your new nanny. She's good, I think. 80% of them were good. We had some horrors. We had some shockers as well. Because I had to, as a lot of us, I was the entire financial, I was the caregiver and the financial caregiver, really.
Yeah.
I think the big thing that made all the difference, and I really credit my dad with this, because my dad was a secondary school principal. And there was a period just after Outrageous Fortune when I wasn't getting any work here, and Sam Neill said to me, you've got to leave. And I was tearing myself in pieces going, if I want to get my career going, I've got to get out of New Zealand. And Dad said to me, he went, to be honest, he said, up until your kids hit about 11 or 12, he said, you can go anywhere and do anything. Like, just go wherever they want, you know, because that their main attachment is you.
Mm-hmm.
But the minute you get to that age, he said, my advice, if you can, stay put, because their world starts to open into their community and their friends, and that's where their anchors are.
Yeah.
And I decided in that moment, I went, right, I'm just going to hope that I keep getting work, and if anyone's going to be under stress, it'll be me. So if I have to leave the country to earn the money to keep us going, I will, but they're not moving. And so we stayed where we are.
And they had nannies
on and off. They had live-ins. Then I would come back. They would, and as they got older, those things changed. Mm-hmm. And a lot of our nannies now are really dear friends. And I think that was the thing that made the biggest difference, was that I just decided that they were...
Stay put, and then you can do whatever you want once they're older and they have their community.
Yeah, and touch wood, they're remarkably normal.
Did it disappoint you when you had your children and then you did and you broke up with your partner? Because some people have the dream of staying together with the same person for the rest of their lives, you know, that cliche.
Yeah.
Was it disappointing? And was it just like, oh, come on?
It was a bit, yeah, you know. But then you live long enough to go, like, life's just riddled with, oh, come on. You know, and some of us have really big versions of that. And some of us have, I mean, my mum, you know, Dad left Mum when she was 56.
Oh,
and
please.
It was like, oh, come on. And then she fell off the fifth floor of the CTV building during the Christchurch earthquake.
I read that.
And we were like, oh.
Broke her ribs.
Oh, everything. One of her feet, when they found her, was round the other way. Oh. Like munted as much as Christchurch. And we were like, she was 71, and we just went, oh, really? Do you really need that?
Come on.
Come on.
Yeah, okay. So you've got, yeah. Okay.
So you, and but everybody's got that. And now I look back and I go, like the only, literally the only regret I have in my life is that I didn't get into dogs earlier. That sounds so weirdly wrong. You know, and I grew up with cats and I always thought that I would hate dogs. And now
I've got
dogs
too.
You've got two dogs. Yeah. It's like, if I hadn't had that bad marriage, and I say that love now because we're friends, the kid's dad and me, we're friends, and there's a lot of respect and care there. If I hadn't gone through all of that, then I wouldn't have these two ridiculous princes that I've got now.
Right, okay.
And I wouldn't be being ripped in half at the possibility of them leaving now. Like they're both going away now. I've always thought that
emptiness
from the moment they leave your vagina, the
or puku,
the moment they leave your puku, it's one direction, and they're just quietly from that moment on, they're leaving you, every minute from the
Don't
newest
I'll
born
cry.
Baby.
I want to talk to you about panic attacks, anxiety, perimenopause, and menopause.
Sweet.
No big deal. Where do we start? Oh God, it's so rude because I asked my mum.
No,
like,
go for it.
My mum's finished menopause. She's 66.
Yeah.
10 years it took.
Mm-hmm.
10 years.
Yep.
There were some moments. Mostly it was fine, but man, she had some doozies. I think I'm at the start of perimenopause.
Why do you think that?
Panic attacks.
Yep.
Hot sweats, although I'm on antidepressants and my psychiatrist said it could be because of them. Depression.
Yes.
Depression. Yes. I don't really want to work.
Yep.
I just don't. I'd rather go to the beach every day with my dogs.
Yep.
So.
Yep.
Was that.
Yep.
For you?
All of it.
Did you realise at the time?
Yeah, but...
Because no one talks about it.
No, no one does talk about it. And no one... My doctor talked about it. She said, oh, yeah, they saved the worst for last. Buckle up. You know. And then I read this, and I'll send it to you. I send it to all my girlfriends who are going through it. There was a piece by Mary Roufle, who's an American writer-novelist, and she wrote a thing called Pause, a little piece called Pause for Granter magazine about menopause. And it's the only one that has actually expressed deeply and truthfully that really what goes on with menopause because you lose your fucking mind.
That sounds like me.
But yes, anxiety, things like sudden physical anxiety all of a sudden, like walking over rocks in a river. I remember going, I feel less stable. You know, like I'm more scared physically than I used to be. Emotionally far more reactive. That was all the sort of the perimenopausal stuff. Getting angrier than I used to. Getting sadder than I used to. And joints starting to hurt. And
that's me.
Sort of paranoia. And a therapist years and years ago had said to me, you need to be careful because you're living on adrenaline and cortisol and you're going to hit menopause and you're going to have, it sounded so dramatic, an endocrinal meltdown.
What does that mean?
It basically means your hormones go berserk and your body just collapses. And that's sort of what happened, is that I just couldn't get up one day. I just cried and cried and couldn't stop crying. And I remember going, I don't even know why I'm crying. I'm just in a state of intense despair and I can't work it out. And I ended up getting medicated because I was not functioning. And
what were you taking? Like antidepressants?
Yeah.
Anxiety?
No, antidepressants.
Okay.
A sort of a cocktail of two. And it took a while to, you know how with them, sometimes you can go really pear-shaped for a bit and then you go.
Makes it worse and then you're good and then worse and good. Yeah.
And then I went on hormone replacement therapy and that also helped. And I was scared of that because of blood clots and all the rest of it. But that has made a big difference too. And actually the dogs, I got them in the middle of it. And I think that helped too. And then it just starts to, we're so adaptable human beings. And so a lot of that awful stuff, you just start to integrate into your life. But what I did notice with the antidepressants, which was so amazing, was that everything that was feeling so overwhelming, it wasn't like it made it disappear. It just was in the other room suddenly. Do you know what I mean? And so you could go, yeah, I know you're there.
But I got shit to do.
I've got shit to do, but I know you're there and I will deal with you, but you're not here.
I took a blood test 6 months ago because I was like, I'm definitely going through perimenopause. The doctor's like, no, you're good. I don't trust that.
No.
I don't trust it.
Trust your body. If you feel it, then I really think that that's the other problem is that, and I've got huge respect for the medical profession. Obviously, half of us wouldn't be here without it.
Mm-hmm.
But in terms of womany stuff, you know.
No way.
You just know. Change your meds. Change them up.
Talk to friends.
Get your girlfriends around and compare psycho stories so that it starts to feel normal. Try HRT.
Yes.
Have a crack at that.
Okay.
Because it really is a game changer.
What does it do? Does it just stabilise?
It regulates. So what you're experiencing is because it's about estrogen depletion. And so HRT just cracks your estrogen up a bit, and then you have to take some progesterone to balance that out.
So many pills.
Then you can also take a little bit of testosterone.
What's the testosterone for?
Keeps you horny.
Oh.
That's how I saw it.
My antidepressants I'm on, they numb you.
Yeah, take some testosterone.
Yeah. I've got a very strong vibrator though.
Oh, that's all right then. Yeah. It's a good, strong vibrator. First time I ever bought a vibrator. This editor at Outrageous Fortune was like, you don't own a vibrator? I was like, no, I've never. She went, oh, for God's sake. So I went in with my youngest son, who was a baby in a pushchair, and I marched into Device on Ponsonby Road. And I had to absolutely, I was nervous. And I walked in and I thought, I just have to front foot this. And I went, okay. Hi, I want top shelf. She went, come to our Swedish section.
Oh, yes, sir.
Yeah.
Got top shelf?
Yeah. Yeah.
I can just imagine you walking out with a big black dildo.
Pretty much.
It was like massive.
No, it wasn't quite that. That would have hurt it. I've been there before and it was not good. But there's a lot.
Been there before.
Too much. I'm little.
Short
passage. Was that TMI?
Nah, I love it.
Yeah, Robin Malcolm, short passage.
Not enough.
So there's a lot in the kit that you can use to help. HRT, antidepressants.
Okay. But it's talk, so much.
Walk, dogs, testosterone, big black dildo. I didn't say that. Therapy.
Yeah.
Meditation, yoga. Cold swimming.
Yes.
Cold swimming. Laughing. Don't give up alcohol.
Yeah.
You don't drink, no?
No, I've that's another interview. I'm not drinking at the moment, but I like drinking a little bit too much.
Sometimes you need a glass of wine at the end of the day just so you can have a really, really, really good laugh.
I know. And then you go to bed and get out the...
Yeah. Took the toothbrush. And then.
What about when it dies just before you have a cum? It's like, oh, fuck! Oh, I have to manually do it!
Oh! I've also never heard that phrase, have a cum.
Have a cum?
What are you going to do? Oh, I'll go home and have a cum. What did you do? I had a cum.
I had a couple of cums.
I had four cums this week.
I think I've had three.
That makes me laugh. I love it.
What do you call it?
Climaxing. What do I say? I have really good orgasm. Yeah, I do. Yeah. I use that term. I don't say climax.
Climax.
I had a climax.
I'm climaxing now.
That's very Christchurch. Have a climax.
I think having a cum is Christchurch.
I'm actually having a cum is Christchurch.
I feel gross about that word cum. Okay, so we've discussed menopause. We've discussed panic attacks. Although, can you detail...
Okay, panic attacks.
Yeah. Because I have them. I've been getting them quite often.
That? My partner on the phone will help me breathe. So breathe in for 8 and out for 6. And that's all you can do. You just breathe. That's the only thing you can do. Mm-hmm. And also, this is where Instagram can be really good. I came across a thing on Instagram the other day, and I tested it out on my son, and he went, I don't like that, I don't do that again. But there's this lovely thing where you breathe in and you breathe out and you breathe in and you breathe out, and then you breathe in, I wonder what my next thought's going to be. You try it. You go,
right.
What? And then all you do is say yourself, I wonder what my next thought's going to be.
I wonder what my next thought's going to be.
Just keep saying that.
I wonder what my next thought's going to be.
Your mind goes blank, right?
Yeah, because you're trying to force your brain to think.
Yeah.
But you can't.
And you're not attaching it. You're going, what am I going to think about next? What am I going to think about next?
And then this. Touch.
Where am I?
Smell.
Smell.
What can
listen.
I smell? What can I hear? Yeah, that's what I do.
Yeah.
My partner does this with me. And then we just do it for about 10 hours.
My partner cuddles me and sings Nature Boy.
Oh, shut up. I want my partner to do that.
Don't tell them.
I'll get her to sing Don't go chasing waterfalls, friends to the rivers. And
well, the other one I like to listen to is, do you remember Emma Pucky?
Yeah.
Dreams and aspirations.
Dreams and aspirations.
Yes.
Da 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 da. She went out with my dad. She lived with me, and I was like, I'd go in the room with a cup of tea going, morning, mum. He broke up with her because she wasn't communicating good enough.
She is incredible.
Mm-hmm. I know.
That album was
one of the albums that got me into singing, because it came out when I was 13, and I was just like, oh, who, how, why, the production, the songwriting.
Like total muse.
Yeah.
Like she had something that I want to sing the entire album with you right now. But
I love that. So, I love it.
But that stuff is so interesting. Ethan Hawke does this beautiful thing about this, right? That so many people in the world consider art of any kind a kind of a luxury, mm-hmm. and yet whenever we have a big moment in our lives, that's the first thing we turn to.
Yep.
We turn to poetry, music, writing. Picture,
yeah.
a favorite film, we go there because that's what keeps us grounded and mm-hmm. keeps us connected to our experience, and that's what helped me. Yeah, absolutely. And you just okay. So there's this amazing podcast, or she's a meditation Buddhist psychologist who works out of the Insight Meditation Center mm-hmm. in Washington, and her name is Tara Brach, B-R-A-C-H.
I know that.
Yeah.
I know that.
And she does a talk every week and has done since 2005.
What does she talk about?
Life, everything, mindfulness, peace, self-compassion, everything. And her titles of all her talks are very specific. So you go... there's a great one you should listen to called Skeleton Woman.
Ooh, what's it about?
It's about being, wherever you go, being chased by your demons. And how to actually how to lie down and cuddle them like you were cuddling your child.
Oh.
And I would listen to her every day for 3 years.
I'm going to listen to her every day for 3 years.
In the bath. I'd go and lie in the bath and I'd listen to her, or I'd listen to her at night if I couldn't sleep.
God.
Or I'd go for a walk and I'd listen to her. And sometimes I would take it all in and sometimes I wouldn't, but there are just very basic things that I got from her. And the big one was, nothing that's happening is wrong.
Nothing that's happening is wrong.
Is wrong.
Wow.
Because when you go through a thing that you're going through, menopause, you know, whatever the experience is, you go, oh, I'm a shit person. This shouldn't be happening. I shouldn't be like this. I shouldn't be. Why aren't I better than this? Why am I hiding in a cupboard crying? This is not me. Why am I being a complete failure? And that's the tricky stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And when you get all that out of the way and you just go, this is the experience right now, it suddenly becomes a little easier to deal with. So, oh no, I put a lot of work.
You need to do a TED talk about it.
I don't want to do a TED talk.
No, but because no, I bumped into you at the park that day and you were doing your panic attack anxiety documentary and we were talking about it and I was like, I don't know anyone. My mum didn't even talk about her menopause.
No.
She talked about it with me once for about 2 minutes because she just wanted to
push it away.
Push it away. And I need, to understand things, I need to go deep.
Yeah, you do. You do. I used to, you know, back in the day when I was getting the hot flushes, I would make my partner and whatever other male friends there were around come out with me into the cold because I'd be fucked if I was going to go out there by myself just because I was having a hot flush.
Yeah.
I would like, right, everyone's coming. And I used to announce it. It was probably a bit much, but I'd be like, right, I'm having a really menopausal day today. So, you know, just this is me because no one would talk about it.
So your sons know a lot about menopause.
They know a lot about menopause.
Yes, and that's awesome because they're men and they're
in
the world and they will have girlfriends or boyfriends or whatever and know because
and their
mother spoke with them about it.
Yeah, yeah. And I also think weirdly, because men go through a whole bunch of shit as they get older too.
They buy cars and root young chicks.
They do, but they actually, I think they're doing that less.
Really?
Yeah, I think they are. And I think that's because we're talking about menopause. It's like we're staying connected too.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
Like my experience anyway is that from the male perspective in a breeder relationship, you know, in a heterosexual relationship, is that the woman will start pushing the man away.
Yeah.
Like, I don't feel good about my body anymore. I don't, and the man's over there going, just let me love you, just let me love you. And you're like going, no, but I'm gross and I'm this and I'm that. And they're like, no. And so the more women talk about that within the partnership too,
the
better it is for the partner. And also they go through their stuff. They go through their stuff. They go through the I'm becoming an older man thing. And women aren't looking at me in the same way. And
but if you love someone and they're your person, you just love everything about them.
Yeah.
I love the let me love you comment because it's like you think you're not worthy, but let me love you. That's the whole point that I'm here. Cuddles. Come on, cuddles. Let's have some yummy takeaway.
Yeah, yeah.
Let's watch a movie.
Yeah. And I'm here not to judge you. I'm here to be that person,
your person.
And so for a lot of women, I think, because we're feeling so shit about ourselves and because we can't talk about it, we then go, don't look at me. And actually, they really want to look.
I know, they just want to be held.
Mm-hmm.
Us wahine.
Mm-hmm. What's your eyeshadow, just by the way?
Oh, is it the green?
Yeah.
It's a new makeup, New Zealand makeup, cruelty-free, vegan-free, Max and Louis. Do you want it?
Yeah.
I'll give it to you. I'll get her to send you some stuff.
Yep, and your dress.
Yeah. You can have everything. You can have anything you want. You're Robin Malcolm. Cheryl West.
No, not anymore. I'm another psycho.
I know. I still remember the first episode of Outrageous Fortune. It's you and the old man buffing on the bed. Yeah.
Grant was hilarious. Whenever you can't do this anymore because we're all very intimacy.
Yeah.
But he used to go out and sell tickets to our sex scenes. He'd go, I've just gone downstairs to the Shortland Street crew and gone, Rob and I are about to do a sex scene. Do you want to come and watch? I mean, and I'd be like, oh. And he's like, no, it's not fit to watch you.
It's to watch him.
They want to just come and watch me. Fucking Aussies.
How do you do sex scenes? I don't even understand how it even happens. Like, wouldn't you just get, I'd just get too turned on. I'd be like, come on then. I'd be like, stop rubbing yourself on me. This is getting me horny.
It's tricky for the young ones sometimes, I think. But that's where the intimacy coordinators are really good because the intimacy coordinators are like stunt.
Yeah.
You know, they're there to keep you safe.
No, it's good. It's a good thing.
But also, you do a couple of them and you become very aware that it's a technical thing, and that also you're in a pretendy world. It's not the real world.
But isn't this the same? Like, can you change your sexual face to suit the character, or is it just always Robert Malcolm?
No, well, that's the thing, is that, you know, and you go home if you've had a day where you've been playing a lot of anger all day and you've been very angry at the character that you've been. It doesn't mean that you're going to leave set and feel really angry at the actor.
Okay.
You know, like, it's like that. So I can go on set and play a character, and I'm me through the character. So I'm calling on proper stuff. And if it's haughty stuff, then that's what you're calling on. And you feel, and you can feel that in the scene with the other character. And it's far better if you do, if there's chemistry there. But then it doesn't mean that I'm going to walk off that set and go, all right, I'm on a route. You know, like, because they are separate. Like, the logic tells you that.
Sometimes actors do fall in love, though.
Sometimes they do.
Like Bella and Thingy from Twilight. Oh, I can't remember their name. Yeah, and then she turned gay.
Yeah, and then they didn't stay together.
Oh. Do you believe in love at first sight?
Well, no. But my one now that I don't talk about, it was almost that. It was love at first conversation.
Oh.
But also, when we met, we were old farts already.
Yeah.
And we'd both
warts
been...
Warts and all. Literally.
So there was a real... You know how you... And I used to really relate to this when you were younger. When you meet someone and you're flirting, you sort of send in your best rep.
Yeah.
It's like... and then it gets really disappointing quite quickly.
It really does.
And we... But when we were older, it was like, no, it's all here.
Yeah, here I am.
Yeah.
And take it.
So I believe in it more now than I would when I was 20, because it's just so much. You're just a dick when you're 20.
I know, you're just so unsure.
You're glorious. And I actually do think 20-year-olds now are far better than we were.
Well, we're all drugged up hoes.
Kids don't, like, my son's friends were around the other day and there were some older people there and someone was talking about sort of the bad old days and this kid just went, can we not talk about drugs? They're so lame.
Oh, my God. I would have been like, who's got the drugs, kids?
I know.
Give mama. I want one.
I know, but these kids, they're...
They don't do drugs.
Their whole thing, which I think is really amazing, their whole thing is gender.
Oh, yeah.
And identity.
Yeah.
Like, that's what we're struggling to catch up with. Yeah. Like, I get my pronouns wrong all the time.
Yeah.
And yet these kids are Indigenous with that stuff.
Yeah.
And they have a whole different relationship to fluidity and you know, and identification and all that. And it's so fucking beautiful. And they're not, they just, you know, they drink a bit. But they don't need to the way we did.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Like, we destroyed so many brain cells so early on.
Yeah.
And there, you hear me?
No, I'm just thinking, that's what we did. Look at us. We're like, oh, the good old days.
Yeah.
Because it was smoking, drinking.
Yeah, but...
Working your ass off.
And... But the kids asked me once about that, and I said, well, you know, fill your boots, but it's your... I didn't say that, actually. But also, so many of those experiences... My memory is of throwing my head back and laughing.
Yeah.
But they don't add to your life. They take you out of your life for a bit. Like, I used to go to dance parties and I wouldn't take alcohol.
Raves.
Yeah, I loved raves. But I would disappear from all my mates and I would just go and dance for 14 hours by myself. And it was a type of meditation.
Yeah.
You know, it's so interesting. I'm going to do a doco next year about microdosing psychedelics as a means of therapy.
Well-being. Have you done microdosing? Because I haven't. I'm too scared to.
No. I mean, I was with that beautiful Holly when we did the anxiety doco, and she microdosed ketamine, and I sat with her while she did that. And
was she okay?
Yeah. She was brilliant. Like, she said, nothing else in her life worked. Like, nothing. She tried everything. She tried every antidepressant going. She was in full therapy, and she was living with a heap of trauma as well. And she was part of this program, And when we came and sat down with her, and she was like, I can't tell you, like, I am in a full-blown anxiety attack right now. Like, I'm sweating, my heart's going.
Because she's being filmed.
Yes, because she's being filmed. And then she took ketamine, this little dose of ketamine, and she sort of would get, she got quite out of it for the first hour.
Wow.
And then she just went, all I feel now is a total lack of bother.
Oh.
But sober, straight, clear-headed. And I said, how long will that last for? And she said, a couple of weeks. You know.
Whoa.
And it was this
one
dose. Just one little, just micro dose of it. And I'm really interested in this stuff because, you know, everybody in the bad old days abused that stuff, obviously.
I know.
But now the mental health profession is looking at it. And that's where it initially came from. So many of those drugs came up through early mental health work in the early stages of the 20th century.
So you're going to do a documentary about that. Are you still going to do a menopause documentary?
Not now that Paddy Gower's done it.
Oh, no. Well, of course he knows everything.
Yeah.
Paddy Gower did a documentary on menopause.
Yeah.
Did he?
How disappointing.
Yeah, no offence, Paddy, but...
No offence. I mean, good on him. He was a bloke and he was interested.
No, yeah.
And I like Paddy.
Well, why can't you do a documentary? Just because he's done one doesn't mean...
Do you know, we pitched one once.
Yeah.
And we were told that it was too female-centric.
That's the whole point.
Yeah.
Ugh. So you'll do
what? Too female-centric. So we made After the Party instead, which is my version of female menopause.
That's your documentary.
That's it. That's it. That's what it really looks like.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
You've been so amazing. Thank you for coming in. I could talk to you for hours and hours. I feel like you're my
same
sister.
Same, dude.
Yeah. Thanks so much for listening to It's Personal with me, Anika Moa. A huge mihi to Robin Malcolm for being so inspiring and sharing so openly with us. Also to the team that helps make this happen, Charlotte Purdy and Vanessa Hawken from Rogue Productions, Tim Watkin and Liz Garten from RNZ, and our audio engineers Blair Stagpool and Adrian Holley. Cole Easton-Farrelly is a video editor, and thanks to Jane Joyce for graphics and Brianna Juritich for production support. It's Personal with Anika Moa is available on YouTube, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you find your podcasts. Don't forget to follow so you don't miss an episode.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.